And so we're back. Hello. After a two-week hiatus, while I took a little break from editing and publishing these conversations for your audio pleasure, I actually escaped to the beautiful countryside of the UK's Lake District. And the importance of being in nature for well-being and to maintain the motivation that we need to keep fighting the good fight for the planet is actually one of the many topics covered today in my conversation with Tess Coughlin Allen from website performance agency Atomic Smash. Atomic Smash has recently been working with the Centre for Sustainable Energy to support its mission with an accessible, inclusive, and sustainable web platform. The CSE's vision, by the way, is pretty cool and worth a mention here. It's a world where sustainability is second nature and carbon emissions have been cut to safer levels and fuel poverty has been replaced by energy justice. So in today's chat, Tess details how Atomic Smash has been supporting CSE in its mission and in communicating its impact. And she also talks about the lessons gained from that work, which we can all learn from. We also discuss the link between the performance of a website and its impact on people and planet. I hope you enjoy this informative conversation. There are plenty of tips in here that you could probably take and execute in your own business, no doubt. So get that pen and paper or that digital notepad ready. Tess, welcome to the Easy Being Green podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm delighted to be here and to chat with you for a little while. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So let's get straight into it. So you are the head of growth at website performance agency Atomic Smash. Another great name. We've had so many great business names on this podcast. I love it. Can you start by telling us a little bit more about your agency's story? Where did it all start? And how did you end up in this crazy world of sustainability?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So Atomic Smash, like you said, it's a website performance agency. We work with WordPress and WooCommerce platforms, and our goal is to evolve them over time to get them more effective for the businesses or nonprofits that are running them. That might mean, you know, better return on investment. It might mean more accessible. It might mean more intuitive user journeys. And a big thing that we do is looking at, okay, can this be faster, more sustainable, and have better website performance, essentially, and you know, better conversions. So that's our sort of goal, and we do that day in, day out. But aside from the main business, we also have like a sustainability working group at the at Atomic Smash, and we're B Corp pending. And there's a long history of working on good projects, ethical projects, working with charities and nonprofits and other B Corps as well as our, you know, as clients. So there's a really long, lovely history of Atomic Smash. This year will be our 13th year in business. I've been around for two of those, very proudly. And the co-founders, David and Piers, have been there since the very beginning, and have seen us on this sort of this journey, and this sort of growth trajectory, which is picking up in a really nice way in recent years. We are also like a WooCommerce partner. Mm-hmm. So certified and endorsed by WooCommerce, which is really nice because it allows us to celebrate the expertise in the team, and also work with some really interesting clients and work very closely with WooCommerce.
Excellent. Fantastic. So when we started chatting, you told me that you've been recently working with the Centre for Sustainable Energy, which sounds like a very awesome business to be working with. Can you tell us what you were doing for them? What challenges were you addressing with your work for CSE?
Yeah, absolutely. So CSE is, so I'll probably interchangeably call them the Centre for Sustainable Energy and CSE.
Sure.
Bear with me. So Centre for Sustainable Energy is a national charity. They're based in Bristol, which is where Atomic Smash is based as well. Their vision basically is a world where sustainability is second nature, and carbon emissions have been cut to safer levels, and fuel poverty has been replaced by energy justice. So to achieve all of that, their mission is to help people change the way they think about energy, and, you know, help them towards better actions to take to put all that into practice. So they came to us because they wanted a new WordPress site to help them continue this mission, to reach and educate and empower a wider audience. And they also wanted a platform that was built in a more accessible and inclusive and sustainable way. So that was a really exciting challenge for us, obviously, and really aligned really nicely with the things that we care about as an organization, and, you know, something that the team, you know, really wanted to work on. So basically, we worked with them very closely to design and build a site in such a way that it would minimize carbon footprint. So there's various ways we can do this. There's some really simple ways, such as hosting the site with a renewable energy source. So that's something that we do with a lot of clients, because it's quite a relatively straightforward switch that usually, if you choose the right hosting provider, benefits them in lots of other ways as well. And so we also sort of mapped out their goals to make sure that the platform would not only deliver like an efficient experience for an intuitive experience for people who visit the site, but also for the team. So nice and efficient way to work through their website and add content on a daily basis. So like I say, we were tasked with delivering a modern and efficient website with a focus on low energy consumption. Mm-hmm. So one of the nicest ways that we did this, which is I love talking about, is basically a low power mode. So essentially what that means is there's a switch on their site. So web visitors can click that switch, and then it will change the site to kind of a dark mode or a different theme. And that does lots of things, such as changes the color contrasts and ensures that it's a more energy efficient site that runs for the end user. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that a design and development improvement can offer like a low carbon option.
It's a really great example, what you're explaining here, of a business that is actually kind of walking its talk. You can't have a Centre for Sustainable Energy and have a really high carbon website. I had no idea that changing like the dark mode of a website would make it more efficient for the user. Like I always thought that was only going to benefit the carbon footprint of it, but actually that's a really nice kind of ripple effect of that sort of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that's nice about that is that one of the main reasons that people come to the website for the Centre for Sustainable Energy is to find ways to minimize their energy bills, to reduce their energy consumption, or to, you know, improve energy efficiency. So the fact that CSE is able to offer them a lower carbon option, that actually is going to save them money. It's going to, like you say, you know, not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. It's really, really good. And it's been like a huge pleasure to be involved with.
So we've talked about digital carbon quite a lot on this podcast, and we've had a couple of interviews with Green Pixie, which is a business that are focused on reducing cloud computing digital carbon. So it's emissions. So that's an area that I'm particularly interested in, just because of the conversations I've had here. But I'm interested in the performance side of a website. Can you tell us more about the link between, I think you touched on it a little bit then, but a bit more detail, the link between the performance of a website and the digital carbon footprint and emissions of a website?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So it's really important, like you say, to build websites to be more energy efficient, to reduce carbon emissions and environmental impact. Actually, something that a lot of people don't know probably is that most sustainability improvements will also have a positive impact on other key areas. So as you've mentioned, performance, but also improved accessibility, improved inclusivity, reduced hosting costs, easier sort of maintenance, and improvements to the user experience, the conversion rates, and actually Google loves it as well. So you're really, if you're trying to make your website more sustainable or higher performance, those things go hand in hand and benefits all these other areas, you know, tangible business benefits. So it's really, really good strategy for people to look at. One of the reasons that performance and sustainability are linked is basically it's there's this sort of decade-long trend of making websites and web pages heavier and more stacked and slower to load. So at the moment, we're seeing people trying to improve the speed, improve the performance, make websites more sustainable. And one of the ways you can do that is using efficient languages to code in to reduce bloat, having leaner, greener websites, therefore, or reducing unnecessary code. Again, these are things that Google rewards you for as well. It's all really, really linked. Things like not having video autoplay, that's obviously really good for site performance. It doesn't burn data. But also it's good for accessibility because if you're autoplaying a video, you're not asking permission from the user to play that video at them. And a quarter of people around the world, a quarter of people visiting websites globally will have accessibility requirements.
Wow.
Yeah. And we've already touched on this a bit, but large pages are kind of a tax on the poor as well, because it's using their energy bills are paying to load these websites. And if these websites are put together in a bad, poor way, or if they haven't been cleaned up in a long time, because they're not getting worked on over time, you know, it's the end user that's paying the bill often. I'll also mention that sort of things like clear navigation, so really intuitive user journeys, will help someone get to the end point of a website or where they want to be, find the information they want to find quickly. And that means that they're not going to be burning energy, you know, getting lost around the site in places they don't want to for no reason. So there's a little bit of a change of mindset that has to happen from an organization. You don't need people to stay on your website, you know, for a really long time if they're not in the right places. You want to help them get to the right places, and then they might stay there a long time, but you want them to achieve their goal. That's the main thing. So everything is really, really interlinked. But yes, any improvements that you can make to site speed and performance are going to help, typically going to help with sustainability too. So it comes together really nicely.
I love that. It's it seems so simple and obvious when you say it like that. It's like, well, of course that's going to make a difference. And yes, why would you want to spend hours on a website not getting the information? And in the past, we've been always kind of business as usual metric for website success, I guess, has always been like load speed. But that's because of people dropping off. But it's, you know, interesting that also connects with that sustainable element of it as well. And that autoplay, so annoying. So I'm glad. Imagine when you're on a bus or something, or on the train, and you suddenly open a website and then suddenly there's music blasting out. But I can imagine there's like some neurodivergencies that would be also quite distressing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting because we have something like 4 billion active users active internet users currently around the world. And increasingly we're data intensive users. So, you know, social media, we talk about autoplay. I mean, we're all used to it now with sort of Instagram and TikTok and everything else. But, you know, those constant autoplays and streaming services like Netflix, Spotify, larger web pages, it's really like an exponential increase in the way we're consuming data. And I guess one of the challenges now is to help inform people that you can be making lots of eco-conscious decisions at home and in your lifestyle, but actually there are things that you can do with your phone or your laptop, the internet, or supporting businesses that are trying to make positive changes in terms of their digital sustainability that will make a big impact on your personal footprint. I mean, I often don't think of the digital stuff as part of my personal footprint, and I work in this area, so I don't blame people if they don't consider it. It is a big challenge, and it's a lot of pressure on an individual to try and make those positive changes. So, I mean, that's why we can do some really great work by improving the sustainability of the websites we work on.
Absolutely. It's that invisible one, isn't it? But it's such a big more impact on carbon emissions than the aviation industry is the well quoted quote now, which was brand new news a few years ago, I feel like, but now it seems to be quoted quite a lot of places. So the awareness is building and people are being more aware of it. But it's great to see organizations taking some ownership over it as well as the end user.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about CSE, or the Centre for Sustainable LNG, either or. So you mentioned there that they're a charity, and you have previously mentioned to me when we've been chatting before that communicating the impact of CSE has been really important to help them secure funding, as most charities need to get, all charities need to get. So could you share some examples that you've taken to help CSE communicate its impact effectively, potentially that other businesses might be able to learn from?
Yeah, absolutely. So they want, they provide their audience with reliable and trustworthy information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they use sort of sound research and practical experience to back all of that up. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they really need to focus on real needs and the big picture, so that they can educate and empower people to, like I said earlier, take actions that will make an impact. Mm-hmm. And so obviously raising awareness of that work is really important, like for any charity and any organization, you know, demonstrating what you're doing and why you're doing it is really important as a narrative. But particularly for, like you said, a charity or a nonprofit that relies on funders to help them deliver the work, the great work that they're doing. So what we wanted to do was have an in-depth look at their target audience groups. And like for many other charities, they have different audience groups that are quite conflicting. So, you know, a lot of charities, let's say, will have funders, they'll have like individual donors, and they'll have people that they're helping indirectly or directly, who might then also come back and be donors. That's quite typical, I'd say. So for CSE, they have funders who are completely different to the people that they're helping. So it is a challenge because you're quite conflicted with the types of people coming to your site, and you want to tell stories to both of them that are going to resonate with both of them. So we wanted to provide the Centre for Sustainable Energy with better tools for storytelling, so that they could demonstrate their impact, and in a way that the content could be nicely shareable, and with like a nice suite of sort of building blocks, so that they could build out campaigns and build out pages flexibly moving forward, all nicely designed, made in a way that's accessible and is always going to align nicely, but gives them kind of the power back in their hands, so that they aren't blocked and they can really move forward whenever they want on their own, without having to go back to a developer for every single change, which a lot of people will take that for granted, but a lot of organizations have poorly built back ends and they actually can't do all of this sometimes. So what we did was we created, you know, a whole vast kind of set of templates that included all these different blocks, and compelling calls to action to make it easier for that impact, that narrative, to be displayed in different ways over time. And we wanted to enable CSE to better promote that impactful work. So we took them through like in-depth workshops to sort of test and challenge assumptions that they'd made, and use as much kind of core data from the previous iteration of the site as possible, so that we can make really informed sort of data-driven decisions about how we'd put things together visually and how users would work through the site to find the pieces of the site with you know, explaining the impact.
Wow, okay.
Something that's really nice that I think you'll see a lot with charities, but if there's an organization that's not doing this yet, I highly recommend they do it. Yeah. Have a way to tell a story using numbers. So obviously we don't want to be too heavy on statistics, because, you know, I don't know, I think there's a stat about how much people remember statistics, and I've forgotten that stat, so that's proof. Okay. But at the same time, it is nice if you can to have a visual way to depict numbers, and then a little bit of a blurb, a little bit of narrative about that, and explain what you're doing and why. But like, that gives both a big picture and kind of a more detailed story. So that's one of the things we've done for Centre for Sustainable Energy. Also, if you have an organisation that has a lot of like real world case studies. For some of our other charity clients, we really focus on those. Lots of really good sort of testimonials and pictures. When you're creating a more sustainable site, you have to be careful with the pictures. There's different ways to showcase photography and imagery to reduce the carbon. For a site like the Centre for Sustainable Energy, actually photographs aren't really necessary and it's much lighter without them, so we reduce that back. But like I say, for other charity clients, those case studies and the storytelling in a real world context, I find is a really effective way to demonstrate impact.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, there's nothing, the old adage, a picture paints a thousand words. It's really true, isn't it? There's sometimes you can't, there's nothing you can do to replace it. And I guess in the grand scheme of things, you have to think about, and this is the same with any business, any charity, any organization, like what's the greater good, as it were? And is it, you know, especially with a charity, communicating your message in a way that resonates with people, that inspires people, that influences people, that makes tugs at the heartstrings where needed, is a much, and so they donate to keep that charity going, is going to be a greater good than, okay, if I can save 300 whatever it is megabytes on this probably less than that. I'm terrible with those measurements. That's so interesting. So I want to come back to you, Tess. What is it that drives you to do what you do? How have you got to where you are today, and what gets you out of bed in the morning?
Those are great questions. Not just because we're talking about me, I think they're just nicely worded questions. So my first work placement after I graduated from university about 10 years ago was actually with Energy Saving Trust, and it was like a marketing and research placement, and it was my first opportunity to actually talk to people who were really passionate about climate change, and also people on the other side who are really passionate about reducing energy poverty. And I was so enlightened by all of that. And I mean, we did like lunchtime talks, like lunch and learns and things. So I got access to these people for the first time. And it always stuck with me that there's such an important set of challenges out there that really affect us all really, really deeply. And we need to do something about. And so, as I said, this was about a decade ago. So at the time, the type of person that cared about sustainability felt a little bit more niche. It was a little bit more stereotypical. And then let's say maybe 5 years ago, that shifted quite a lot. And then now people make, you know, conscious buying decisions. And obviously there's been, you know, the rise of sort of Greta and protests around the world with the younger generation. So it's really, really shifted things. But since then, I've always thought, you know, there's a way that my work and the way I care about the environment can come together. Sadly, a few years after that, I worked for a company that it turned out the project I was working for was funded by gas and oil money. And I was so disappointed. I had no idea. And I was so disappointed and conflicted when I found that out. Different company to where I am now, obviously. And so then following that, I wanted to try and work with organizations that made me proud and aligned better with my own sort of moral compass and that would make me proud. So I started sort of freelancing as a copywriter for a few years with organizations that were ethical, sustainable, or open source, like WordPress related businesses. So then, you know, 2 years ago, I started working with Atomic Smash. And so that's open source, because it uses open source technology, so WordPress and WooCommerce. And we, like I said earlier, work with loads of charities, nonprofits, organizations that care deeply about the world, not just about profits, which is really, really important to me personally and a lot of people in the team. So I was really happy over the most parts of my career to be able to align sort of my identity and my passions with the work I do day to day. And I was talking recently with a friend about what we think would make sort of the general population feel better and more engaged with the environment. Because I recently moved halfway up a mountain in Wales, and I go out up the mountain most days with my dog And I was walking up the mountain with a friend, and we were saying, how amazing would it be if everyone had half a day a week in their working week where they were encouraged to take it away from the computer or whatever they do and go out and be in nature, whether it's a mountain or a forest or something else, and spend some time outdoors with someone. Maybe it's a meeting, maybe it's just a personal catch up with a friend, or maybe it's just on your own, but doing something active, breathing fresh air and seeing the world and being in the world. And like, how amazing would that be for, you know, well-being? I'm sure it would have huge health benefits. And I would love, if I could, you know, change something from the UK government, I would say this is what we need to do and test out how it works. So there's a lot of, I guess for me, a lot of things in my world that I like to bring together as much as possible. So professional stuff, being active, being outdoors, and any opportunity I have to do all of that, you know, that is what gets me up in the morning and makes me feel sort of energized and happy.
I love that so much. And it's interesting you mentioned the nature thing, and also earlier you said people don't remember statistics, and this is just a statistic that I can't remember or say. But there was a recent report that came out about advertising in nature and the decline of advertising of nature being shown in advertising that has had a direct impact on people's kind of opinions on the environment and opinions on nature. So it is so, I completely agree with you that it is so vital to get out in nature, and that really connects us with the world and that we want to look after, and the resources that we need to survive come from that world, come from that planet. And then of course there's all the benefits of biophilia and mental health benefits and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it would be amazing, wouldn't it, if that was something that was funded, particularly for people who don't have the financial means potentially to get out from the middle of London to somewhere actually properly in the countryside. That'd be an amazing step. So the government's been talking about a 4-day working week, hasn't it, recently? I've been seeing some headlines on that, which is a bit of a step change from a few years ago, when it appears on the front page of the Daily Mail. A few years ago, I believe they were saying this is a stupid idea. But that would be another way of doing it, is to, you know, actually incentivize getting out into nature. It's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. So the final question on today's podcast, and it's one we ask all of our guests, is, do you think there's such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet?
I don't yet, honestly. And it's funny because I'm very enthusiastic as a person, very glass half full. I'm an optimist, but I just think the way businesses are run at the moment, they just can't be truly sustainable. It's how I feel. And that's not to say I've done a whole bunch of research into this, but that's how I feel. However, I also believe that we all need to be active and curious and happy to take steps forward. And just because you can only take 2 out of 10 steps forward doesn't mean you're not making progress. So I think I fully support all the businesses and nonprofits as well around the UK and further afield that are doing what they can to make incremental improvements in terms of sustainability. And that's reflected in the way that we work at Atomic Smash as well. It's, you can make those small improvements regularly, and over time it will have a really, really positive impact. And I think, okay, we might not be there yet, but if we all keep talking about what we're doing and trying to share and learn, then collectively we'll all get closer to that over time. Do you have an opinion on that one?
I do. And most of the guests on the podcast have the same, very similar thoughts to you, is that the world is not really set up for us to be truly sustainable. And I think we've come from, I think maybe 5 years ago, there was this like push that if you're going to be sustainable, you have to like be 100% sustainable, and there's it's black and white, but it isn't. And it's a, you know, even the word sustainability has changed, and people are, you know, the language around it has changed. We talk about impact. One of my guests I spoke to this week was talking about cause, having a cause, that, you know, we talk about purpose. There's so much different languaging around it. But until we live in a world where all the energy is renewable, we can't be truly sustainable. There's always going to be an impact. But like you said, if businesses are mindful about it. Like you mentioned, shopping habits, we've been more mindful and conscious of how we consume, it's only going to create a better outcome. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Oh, fantastic, Tess. Well, that's a lovely place to end our conversation today. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing all those really valuable learnings and insights with our audience.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's been amazing.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing my conversation with Tess. If you want to learn more about Atomic Smash, you can do that by heading to the website atomicsmash.co.uk, and a link to that will be in the show notes and in the episode transcript, which you can find at easybeinggreenpodcast.com. If you liked this episode, which I hope you did, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe or follow this podcast on your favourite podcast app. And I'd be even more grateful for your 5-star review, which helps other people find these conversations. Perhaps you know somebody who might benefit from listening to this podcast. Why not give it a share with them as well today? If you'd like to get in touch with me about this episode, or if you have ideas for a future one, you can do that by following at the Easy Being Green podcast on Instagram and sending me a DM there, or finding me on LinkedIn, sending me a DM there, or you can always email us at hello@easybeinggreenpodcast.com. I hope you'll join me next time when I'll be diving into the world of purpose-led angel investing with the amazing Olivia Siboney. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.